Well, today is May 4th, 2017, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Philip Alexiou in Washington. Coming up, weeks after dropping the mother of all bombs, ISIS remains resilient. France's presidential candidates debate ahead of Sunday's vote. North Korea criticizing China amid nuclear disputes. And scientists track beetles to stop a plant plague.
That bacteria then gets into the veins of the plant. It gets into the veins and it literally gums them up with like this sticky stuff.
It's all on today's International Edition. Some rare criticism coming out of North Korea directed toward China. Referring to some commentaries from Chinese state media, the North State news agency published by the KCNA said this, quote, China had better ponder over the grave consequences entailed by its reckless act of chopping down the pillar of the DPRK, China relations. China's commentary from China's Global Times was calling for the North to abandon its nuclear program, and the North thinks that this is a violation of its rights. The Global Times also saying that the North is using a form of irrational logic when it comes to its nuclear program. Now, it seems each week or sometimes each day things might be getting worse when it comes to the North's nuclear program and the actions of its leader, Kim Jong-un. But is that the case? Earlier, VOA's Lori London spoke with James Kelly, the former Assistant U.S. Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs under President George W. Bush, and asked how much of a concern he has over the current threat North Korea poses and if the North is actually a bigger threat today than in the past.
It is a growing threat, but not a necessarily bigger at this time. The part that certainly concerns many Americans would be the development of a proven ability to launch ballistic missiles with nuclear weapons included at the U.S. mainland. That's a capability that they have not had before. The North Koreans' capability against the South has certainly been major over many, many years, even without nuclear weapons.
If China hasn't been able to convince them to stop developing these weapons in the past, what can it do now that would be different? Or what has the Trump administration done to get China more on board with this?
Well, the Trump administration is obviously trying to convince China to do more, and they may have some marginal successes. I don't expect that China is going to drastically change its policies, but there are many quiet things that I think China could do, particularly with North Korean activities inside of China, of obtaining sensitive items that may be useful in their nuclear and missile programs. I think China could do a great deal more of that without any public announcement at all or without threatening the collapse of North Korea. So I wish the administration well on this, but I don't expect any great or visible changes in China's attitudes towards North Korea.
The president said that it could be that we have a conflict with North Korea. Are you concerned that we could have a conflict?
There's always that risk. And as a statement that there could be a terrible war, maybe a surprise to President Trump, but it's certainly not a surprise to all of us and to all South Koreans as well, who can remember the tenseness of this border over all this time and the size and capability of the militaries across the demilitarized zone. What I think has been missing in particular is recognition of the lies concerns in this and the recognition that South Korea's concerns, at least at this time, are really considerably greater than America's concerns. This is not just something between Pyongyang and Washington, D.C. This is a matter that very much involves all the South Koreans, and with a delicate and uncertain political environment in South Korea, I think that's an important factor that I'm not sure that the administration has given adequate attention toward.
What do you make of the president's comments about being honored to meet, or he would be honored to meet with Kim Jong-un?
Well, the president says lots of things that are very hard to understand, and that was one of them. But I think, put it perhaps most favorably towards the president, we can say that he is willing to take all kinds of measures, including a meeting with Kim Jong-un, if it's necessary to resolve this problem. But recognition of Kim Jong-un in the face of the enormous human rights violations is certainly unwelcome.
Is there any way that you can see that we can solve this ongoing crisis between
North Korea? Something will happen in North Korea, and we'll spend a lot of time explaining why it was easy to understand. But until then, we're going to have a long-standing tenseness. It goes back before the war of 1950, and it's been a tense border ever since then, with ever-increasing capabilities of military equipment, including this nuclear weapons now in the north. And so it's always been dangerous, and it is now. We can hope things smooth it out, but until there is at least a modification of behavior in North Korea, it's going to be a dangerous place.
That's Laurie London speaking with James Kelly, former Assistant U.S. Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs under President George W. Bush. Well, it is 12 minutes past the hour, and that means, well, I don't know, it's time for social media hour or moment with Mr. Andrew Palchewski. And you got several things on the docket today. What do we
have? Busy day on social media, starting with take two for the health care bill. The House of Representatives set to vote today on President Trump's health care proposal. Lots of activity over this on social media. The opponents, you're seeing them again swelling up on social media using hashtags like hashtag vote no AHCA, that's the acronym for the bill, and hashtag save ACA, which is the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, which is what this bill is trying to replace. A lot of people listing the names and phone numbers of representatives who are either undecided or leaning one way or the other to try to sway their vote. And a lot of people using social media to organize rallies. So a lot of the tactics we always see in political gamesmanship and when these bills come about, the activism, it's still going on. It's just being better organized through social media.
See, I'd love to test all those people who are arranging all these wonderful little rallies online and find out what they actually know about the bill.
Well, that's the interesting thing. I did see a tweet from somebody who used these hashtags, but he said that he is voting, saying to vote yes on this healthcare bill. He said, hashtag Obamacare helped me, which is one of the other hashtags people are using, Obamacare helped me. He said, Obamacare helped me to lose about $75,000 in credits and increase premiums for 8 employees in my small business. So you do see it from both sides, people sometimes using these hashtags for the opposite message for what they're intended to talk about, in this case, why he thinks this healthcare bill should pass.
And it's so complicated because obviously what people have now, it works for people, and then I guess, like you just pointed out, it's not working for some people. So
hard to put a solution out there that works for everybody, but they try to do the best they can. At least that's what we hope.
All right, what's next on your list?
Well, today is May 4th here in the U.S., so that is hashtag Star Wars Day, because May the 4th be with you. That's why it's become Star Wars Day.
Comes up with
I didn't come up with it. I just, you know, have to report on it. But that's the hashtag. Hashtag Star Wars Day. Hashtag May the 4th be with you. So Star Wars fans are rejoicing, but a poignant holiday after the death in December of Star Wars actress Carrie Fisher, who, of course, played Princess Leia. Moments and memes aplenty on social media. You can find all of those under those hashtags. Not enough time to talk about all of those. And the other big story out of the UK, social media lit up last night after an emergency meeting was called at Buckingham Palace. Word was that it was about Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, of course, Queen Elizabeth's husband. Rumors swirling on social media that he had died at the age of 95. Well, thankfully, he is not dead. He's just stepping down from public life. He will be retiring from his public duties in the fall. But didn't stop this rumor from swirling on social media. It's kind of a bad game of telephone. One person tweets something and says, oh, I heard it from so-and-so. And then they say, I heard it from so-and-so. To the point where there were reports of French news outlets reporting on the death. That was apparently just a Twitter rumor. So no one had actually reported on the death. The Sun newspaper unfortunately accidentally published an incomplete obituary for Prince Philip, so they have a bit of egg on their face. But a lot of people, now that the rumors have been quashed, are saying at 95 years old, and he's going to be 96 next month, Prince Philip probably deserves to retire at that age. I think he's worked a long, long life.
Well, maybe all that work and all those appearances, that's what keeps him going. And he has had a history of, I guess, heart problems.
Yes, and a history of verbal gaffes. I think that people are going to miss that as well. He's had some things, politically incorrect things that he said out while he's unveiling plaques. In fact, just this past week, he said he's the world's most famous plaque unveiler, because that's what he seems to do with his time. So some much-needed rest for him.
All right. Andrew Podcheski. Thanks a lot. Always good to have you in here.
Always good to be here. Thank you.
All right. You're listening to International Edition. Well, among the top stories in the world, President Trump signing an executive order to protect and vigorously promote religious liberty. We'll find out today if the House Republicans had enough votes to pass health care. They say they do. Turkey and Russia and Iran sign a deal for safe zones in Syria, and Iraq and the U.S. are in talks to keep American troops in Iraq after the fight against the Islamic State ends. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study suggests that modern humans may be more closely related anatomically to a species of great apes called the bonobo than the chimpanzee. Researchers from two Washington, D.C. universities made their findings after examining and comparing the muscular systems of the three species. Past research, including a gene sequencing conducted back in 2012, found that both chimpanzees and bonobos share 99% of our DNA. Bernard Wood from George Washington University is one of the three authors of the study. He says that bonobos are the closest we can get to a living ancestor since their muscles haven't changed as much as the common chimpanzee. Scientists think that the modern human split from the common chimpanzee bonobo ancestry about 8 million years ago, with the two great ape species splitting about 2 million years ago. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
French presidential candidates Marine Le Pen and Emmanuel Macron met face-to-face for a crucial pre-election debate late last night. Now, the two won the most votes in the first round of the election on April 23rd, but neither won the majority. Opinion polls ahead of the final vote on Sunday show Macron, the centrist candidate, ahead of the ultra-conservative Le Pen. VOA's Larissa Hoke reports.
Security is tight in the French capital ahead of the May 7th runoff election. About 3,500 men will be deployed around Paris on Sunday. A buoyant Macron arrived for the 160-minute-long televised showdown with rival Le Pen on a rainy Wednesday afternoon. For Le Pen, the debate was a chance to narrow the 20% gap in the polls that consistently favor her 39-year-old rival.
I am here to defend my ideas. He is here to defend a stance.
The candidates tackled main campaign themes, including France's growing unemployment rate, security, health policy, and the country's future in the European Union. The 48-year-old Le Pen sought to expose Macron as a representative of the establishment the voters resent.
You are the darling of the system and the elites. Your mask has dropped. We've seen the choices you have made during the runoff campaign, choices that are cynical, shameful, and that reveal the coldness of the investment banker.
Macron, a former banker and former minister of economy, has portrayed himself as a centrist, representing all the people of France.
Big objective for Emmanuel Macron is to show that he's not only the candidate of the France who goes well, he's not only the candidate of the most educated, most rich French.
Macron's aim was to prove that Le Pen's ideas, such as having France exit the European Union, are dangerous for the country.
Vous êtes la véritable héritière. You are the true successor of the far-right leaders of your party, who has fed on the anger of the French people for a very long time. I don't have to talk about your heritage because you have defended it yourself for years.
The debate will ultimately make little difference, says analyst Bruno Cotre.
It is typically the communication situation where a big mistake can cost you some points in the electorate, but it's not going to make you the winner or the loser of the election.
The latest opinion polls show that Le Pen has gained some ground recently, but not enough to pose a serious threat to Macron. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
Almost 3 weeks after the United States dropped its most powerful non-nuclear bomb in eastern Afghanistan, the target Islamic State group continues to show battlefield resilience as well as run its FM radio channel in the area. Aisha Tanzim reports from VOA's South Asia Bureau in Islamabad.
In the 3 weeks since the U.S. dropped the mother of all bombs in eastern Afghanistan, fierce fighting has continued with its target, the Islamic State Khorasan province. Last week, two American soldiers died in an intense three-hour gunfight with ISKP. This week, ISKP claimed it took control of a district from the Taliban. Meanwhile, the ISKP FM channel, called Khilafat Radio, can still be widely heard in most of Nangarhar province, including the capital, Jalalabad. Locals, like Jalalabad resident Romal, say the radio is an effective propaganda tool. I am against this radio, but when I listened to it, even I became emotional and thought of going and joining IS. Locals are worried about the impact the radio is having, particularly on youth and on people living in the rural areas. The two-hour daily broadcast in the local Dari and Pashto languages airs religious messages and urges people to join ISKP in the jihad against foreign forces. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
And you're listening to International Edition.
News is mobile and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. For detailed information about your favorite sports, visit our website, voaafrica.com. And if you want to chat with me and sports fans in Africa and all over the world, visit my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. There, the sports talk never stops. So come on, join the action with the Sunny Side of Sports.
Elon Musk's SpaceX program says it'll begin launching internet-providing satellites in 2019. The move was announced by SpaceX Vice President of Satellite and Government Affairs Patricia Cooper in testimony before the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation. She says the company eventually plans to field over 4,000 small satellites into low Earth orbit by 2024 using the company's partially reusable Falcon 9 rockets. Cooper says SpaceX intends to launch the system on board the Falcon 9 rocket, leveraging significant launch cost savings afforded by the first stage reusability now demonstrated with the vehicle. And she adds that the company will field two prototype satellites by the end of 2017 and in early 2018. Internet access via satellites can be slow, but Cooper says the technological advances will make SpaceX able to offer speeds comparable to terrestrial providers. The company says internet speed in the U.S. lags behind other developed countries. Furthermore, rural areas are not served by standard broadband providers. The company's constellation of satellites could deliver high speeds without cable. Modern agriculture is feeding more people more cheaply than ever with large-scale farms that grow just one or a few crops. But there are risks in this way of feeding the world. A new book explores how large-scale agriculture invites large-scale attacks of pests and diseases. VOA's Steve Barragona met with the author who is enlisting the public to try to stay ahead of the next crop plague.
If you like your kebabs with zucchini, if you love squash, cucumbers, or melons, then these little beetles are a problem. Because spotted cucumber beetles attack all those plants, and they can carry a nasty kind of bacteria, says North Carolina State University ecologist Rob Dunn.
That bacteria then gets into the veins of the plant. It gets into the veins and it literally gums them up with like this sticky stuff. And that then causes the veins to clog and something very much like a heart attack for the squash plant.
The disease can devastate a field. And like many plant plagues, Dunn says it spreads more easily on modern agriculture's large-scale farms.
Now, even for pretty minor crops, we plant exactly the same variety for miles and miles. And so if you're at the edge of that, like some hungry bacteria or hungry fungus or whatever else, it's the holy land, right? I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, you can eat from one end to the other.
The worst-case scenario is the Irish potato famine of the 1840s. About 1 million people died when a fungus wiped out the one crop on which most of the population subsisted.
We imagine that to be some other time period. Those are different people. You know, that's the 1800s. That's not about us.
But his new book, Never Out of Season, tells the stories of Henry Ford's ravaged rubber plantations in the 1930s, the fungus that destroyed Brazil's chocolate industry in the 1980s, and more. Dunn agrees that modern agriculture is feeding more people less expensively than ever. But he says we should prepare for the inevitable next disaster.
We don't have a clue about the species that help our crops. And so if there's a fungus on which the roots of squash depends, we don't know it. If there's a parasite that attacks the beetle that carries the bacteria, probably nobody's studying it. And that's true for most of our crops.
Dunn is working to fill in some of those gaps, and farmers and gardeners can help. Go to iNaturalist.org or download the iNaturalist app and find the Great Pumpkin Project. If you see bugs on your squash, cucumber, or melon plants, take a picture.
What we hope to do is to have millions of these images from around the world so we can know which of these beetles are living in which places and eating what.
And perhaps you can help save the squash from the next plant plague. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Raleigh, North Carolina.
And you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com or like us on Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us, everybody. I'm Philip Alexiou in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Speaking before the House Armed Services Committee, Admiral Harry Harris, commander of the U.S. Pacific Command, called North Korea the most immediate threat to the security of the United States and our allies in the Indo-Asia Pacific.
The only nation to have tested nuclear devices in this century, North Korea has vigorously pursued an aggressive weapons test schedule with more than 60 ballistic missile events in recent years.
Such tests include a failed missile launch on April 16th. North Korea has also ratcheted up rhetoric against the U.S. and its allies. These ongoing provocations are why U.S. President Donald Trump ordered a thorough review of U.S. policy pertaining to North Korea upon assuming office in January. In light of the growing threat, the time has come for all of us to put new pressure on North Korea to abandon its dangerous path, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson told the U.N. Security Council.
I urge this council to act before North Korea does. We must work together to adopt a new approach and impose increased diplomatic and economic pressures on the North Korean regime.
Secretary Tillerson presented a 3-point plan to the UN Security Council, calling for full implementation of already standing resolutions, suspension or downgrading of diplomatic relations, and increasing North Korea's financial isolation. In an interview with Fox News, Secretary Tillerson explained that China, a major trade partner, has a key role.
We know that China is in communications with the regime in Pyongyang. They confirmed to us that they had requested the regime conduct no further nuclear test. And in fact, we were told by the Chinese that they informed the regime that if they did conduct further nuclear test, China would be taking sanctions actions on their own.
Our goal is not regime change, Secretary Tillerson told the Security Council, nor do we desire to threaten the North Korean people or destabilize the Asia-Pacific region. He noted, however, that diplomatic and financial levers of power will be backed by a willingness to counteract North Korean aggression with military action if necessary. We much prefer a negotiated solution to this problem, he said, but we are committed to defending ourselves and our allies against North Korean aggression.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.